This week's show with Ilka Cochran of Mabel Figworthy's Fancies is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery, home of Sassafras Samplers, and in 2022, celebrating 5 years as your needlework supplies home. Be sure to visit the Sassy Jack's website and get your kit for The Sun Always Shines at Sassy Jack's, a special design by Lindy Stitches to celebrate Sassy Jack's 5th anniversary. Also, check in regularly so you don't miss out on any of the monthly releases of new Sassafras sampler charts. As we await the opening of the new Sassy Jack store in a couple of months, visit sassyjackstitchery.com for all of your needlework needs and to sign up for several live classes and workshops that will be offered in the coming months. Thanks to Sassy Jacks for sponsoring the show. And now on to our conversation with Ilka Cochran. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week from England, for the fourth time, Ilka Cochran. Ilka, welcome.
Hello. Good to be back.
Boy, four times. You know, I thought we'd done two. And then I looked
it up.
Yeah, and then I looked it up, and then this is the fourth time, so that's fantastic.
Obviously, I didn't make much of an impression last time.
No, it's been 2 years since the last one. I forget. I couldn't believe that either. They've been 2 years, yeah. So
I know. I looked at the date, and it was just after I'd been to the Netherlands for the last time, and then COVID hit. So, quite a significant date that was.
Yeah. We're on the both ends of it. At least I hope we're on the back end of it this time. Yeah. So, have you been able to go visit family during the pandemic, or is that on the horizon here?
No, unfortunately not. We're hoping to go over this April. So, fingers crossed that everything stays as it is, and we'll be able to go.
Yeah, that's gets old after a while. Yeah. So, all right, 2 years since we've talked. And last we talked, you were working on the RSN, Royal School of Needlework, your certificate. And what had you done the Jacobean? How do you say that? How do you guys say that? Jacobean. Okay. Had you finished that? I remember you working on it and working on the design and the colors.
Do you know what? I can't remember whether I actually finished it. I think I finished it. I was set to finish it just before the pandemic hit, I think, and then it sort of got a bit derailed. but so I would have been sort of halfway through at that point.
Okay.
But yes, I finished that and went on to Goldwork, finished that. So third module at the moment.
I have a sense that as time goes on, we're going to measure a lot of things. It's not going to be BC and AD. It's going to be before pandemic and after pandemic. I just have a sense.
Yeah. I know. Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. So, the Jacobean then, because I think it's fun to know about the experience of working toward a certificate and what you go through, because there's got to be times where it's incredibly intense and stressful, and then at other times it's just a lot of fun. Because I remember you working on the colors and trying to get that all right with the Jacobean. How did that come out then?
Yes, the Jacobean's interesting because it's crewel embroidery, so it's wool on linen twill, and for reasons best known to themselves, the RSN insists that you stick with three main colors, or rather you stick with two main colors, and you have five shades of each, and then you're allowed two contrast colors or things to sort of pick out little details. So it's quite limited, but the idea is that that sort of gets your creative juices flowing and teaches you to work with a limited palette and not let that stifle your creativity. So that was fun. I ended up with five browns, five turquoises, and two oranges. I used the orange rather too much, and I knew that before I handed it in, but I liked the look of it. And that's one of the things while you're working on your certificate. The RSN have a very specific way in which they want you to do things. And you know that when you sign up for it. If you're not willing to submit to that, if you like, you'd better just not start. you know, and when I do my own thing in between the certificate, I will do things differently. And the tutors, bless them, will actually tell you sometimes, like, this is how I am meant to teach you, but occasionally I do it this way. So that's fine. You're in a sense, it's like working towards an exam, and you need to know what the examiners are going to look at. Yeah. So that's what you learn. And it gives you a really, really good technical grounding. And it's a bit, when I taught English, I used to tell the students when they were trying to be a bit creative with the language, I said, you need to know what the rules are before you can play with the rules.
Right.
So that's more or less what I was doing there. And sometimes that is extremely frustrating because you have to do things a certain way. You're trying to be pernickety about everything. I was doing the big trunk of the tree in chain stitch. And for the first few rows, I measured every chain stitch.
Oh my.
So that they were all... They were all 3 millimeters long, or 3.5, or something like that. Until I got my eye in, and then I sort of went from there. Do I do that when I'm doing my own stuff? Actually, sometimes I do, which is a bit embarrassing. But no, not always. It depends on what you're working on and what you want. And when I teach embroidery, I tell people, you know, everybody has their own idea of what they want to produce and what they want their project to look like. And some are happy with a slightly messy outline, and others will unpick everything that isn't exactly right. And both are fine, as long as you are happy with the end result.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, isn't that, though, the RSN certificate, or really any education you get there, isn't that the real power of it, though, is that it gives you a rock-solid foundation for whatever technique you're studying?
Yeah, that's absolutely it. And that's why I don't really understand when people do gripe a bit about, oh, they're being so strict, or, oh, you always have to do it this way. And, yeah, that's what you're there for. Yes, I found it extremely helpful. I had done some crewel work before, but just that thorough getting into it, getting down to the slightest details, just little tips and tricks about how to get your wool through your twill so that it treads least. Mm-hmm. Tiny things like that, which just work and just make your stitching that little bit better, which is lovely. And things that you don't necessarily find in books. And I find that when I'm teaching myself as well, that the things that students appreciate are often the things that you've worked out after a lot of stitching yourself. And you say, look, this is not in the books, but actually, if you do this, or if you tuck that under there a little bit, it'll look so much better. And they are the really, really helpful things. I think the only thing I will not easily forgive the Royal School of Needlework for is that they insist on Appleton's crewel wool. but that has been a bit of a bone of contention between them and me. And, oh, well, you know.
So I have a question. Did you ever make peace with your slate frame?
shall we say we have a truce?
Okay. All right.
The slate frame that I used for the Jacobean one was, by RSN standards, that was a small one. So I opted for the 18-inch one instead of the 24-inch one. Now, an 18-inch slate frame is not 18 inches. An 18-inch slate frame has an 18-inch webbing on it, but the whole thing is much bigger. Mm-hmm. And so it has to rest on trestles, and I simply cannot work with trestles. It does my back in. My eyesight is such that I have to stand up and bend over it to see some of the detail, which is not good for your back. So after the Jacobean module, I wrote to them and said, look, I really want to do this, but it's not going to happen if I'm going to have to work with this setup. Can I please work with a smaller slate frame? Because the Goldwork module, the size of the design is about A5. And for canvas work, it's about A5. And for silk shading, it's half that. So you really don't need a 24-inch slate frame.
Yeah.
Right.
And so after a bit of sort of to and fro, they were very helpful. And they said, yes, I could. It had to be a minimum of 12-inch, which is fine, because that works with my lap stand. I've got an Aristo lap stand, which I originally bought for my Millennium frame. And it will sit on there with the help of a couple of ice lolly sticks because the arms are not quite long enough. High-tech solution, that.
It's whatever works, right?
Oh, yes.
So that allows you then to stitch extended periods without your back screaming at you.
That's right, yes. So that's working really well. I also treated myself to a second Lowry stand because if I do go on to the diploma, I will have to do appliqué, which is the first module there, and that is much, much larger, so I will need to use the large slate frame. But I've been told, and I have tried it out, that with two Lowry stands clamping both sides, you can actually work like that a lot easier than with the trestles.
So, okay. Oh, that's good to know. That's good to know.
Hmm. Yes, I tried it out, and it was really very, you have to set it up a bit so that both the Lowry's are equal height and so on. But otherwise, it works very well. So, yeah.
Good trick. So when you're doing the Jacobean, and they say these colors and these colors only and very limited, and then, of course, you have many years of your own design work. Was that a stretch for you creatively to have to work within those confines, or was it a fairly easy adjustment?
It was a bit. I started out mostly with Hardanger, which, of course, is white on white, so that's pretty limited. But even there, I tended to throw colour at it. So I tend to go a bit mad with the colours that I throw at something. But it was a really good exercise because it forced me to look at the design and say, what is essential? What can I do? How can I contrast things which are going to be similar colours because I have so few of them simply by texture? Mm. And that was interesting because when I did a 3-day class on Opus Anglicanum, so silk embroidery in the medieval English style, there the shading and the contrasting is very often done simply by the direction in which the split stitch goes and the way it catches the light. Mm-hmm. So sort of drawing on that and thinking, well, you know, even if I have two very similar colours together, if one of them is a stem stitch filling and the other one is a trellis, then the textures are so different that they will still stand out from each other. So that was a really useful exercise.
So you're really using that because you're only using wool. So all of your texture has to come from the stitches.
Yes.
And so your variety came that way. Getting the.
Purely from the stitches. Which is interesting because in canvas work, which I'm doing now, the whole idea is that you do throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at it. And I mean, not to say that you have to include absolutely everything that exists in your stash or the various needlework shops, but you are encouraged to use silks, wool, linen, cotton, ribbons, chenille, whatever, as long as it fulfills a function within the design. Mm-hmm. So that's a completely different approach, and that's the great thing about the whole certificate, is that you are doing so many different things. So the wool is very much lots of different stitches that give you the different effects. Silk shading is you're purely working in stranded cotton. You can use stranded silk if you want to. One strand, and everything you do is in sort of long and short stitch. And needle painting. So there you are literally doing the it's like painting with a very, very fine brush. gold work is gold everywhere. So that's the only color. That's the only color you've got. The only color you've got is gold and your background. So there, it's purely the texture of the different metals and wires and threads that you choose. And each of these techniques poses different challenges and stretches you in different ways. So it's a great experience.
I have a question. For the Royal School of Needlework, you have to complete each module before you move to the next one?
Strictly speaking, yes. What generally happens is you're supposed to have 8 classes per module, 8-day classes, plus the same amount of homework. That's laughable because you do about 3 or 4 or 5 times that amount at home. But generally, when you get toward the end of one module and you get to the point where you're mounting your finished embroidery, which can easily take a class and a half, especially if you're doing it for the first time, then you are encouraged to already start thinking about your next module and choose some colors or a design or do some sketching and things like that. So they overlap a little bit. And in mm-hmm. under certain circumstances, students have been allowed to work 2 simultaneously. So,
yeah.
And my question, the question is, it sounds like you're moving on. At one point you hadn't decided that I thought you were just going to do the crewel and the gold work mm-hmm. and you're thinking about being done. Okay. What changed your mind?
My husband would like to know that. he keeps telling me, oh, you were just going to do the 2, and suddenly I hear you saying the word diploma. it's when I started it, I didn't
this is
really
a guy
know.
Who's seen this is a guy who's seen the movie several times over, yes.
Yep. When he worries too much, I ask him when his latest Austin 7 is going to arrive and what he's going to do with it. it was just I didn't really know what it was. I'd done some day classes. I wasn't sure how the certificate would relate to that. I knew it was going to be longer and more intense. And there were the 2 techniques that I particularly wanted to do. I particularly wanted to do gold work. I knew I had to do crewel before I could do gold work. And I thought, I'll see what happens. And if I like it, I'll go on. And if I don't like it, I'll stop. And I really enjoyed it. So I thought, yeah, I'll go on. And mind you, being sort of in my canvas work module, I'm beginning to question the wisdom of that sometimes. But I think that's good for me because I had done crewel work, I had done gold work. This is a completely new venture for me. So that's really stretching me.
It's so interesting to hear that because at least from my perspective, I don't know how you feel, Beth. To me, the counted work, canvas work, whatever, is in relative terms the easy stuff. And crewel work, surface embroidery, gold work is where the real challenge is at. And then from your perspective, it's a complete flip.
It is. I suppose it depends what you're used to. In my embroidery group, there are a lot of ladies who do cross-stitch and counted work. And we did a little applique and embroidery workshop for Christmas the other year. And they were looking at the kit and the fabric, and they were going, but where do I stick the needle? Aren't any holes. And I said, well, do you see the lines there? That's where we're going. It's going to be fine. Whereas I'm now so used to the idea that I can stick my needle anywhere, that to work on a grid again is quite like the limited palette of colours in crewel work. That is the limiting, not limiting, it's the constraint that makes you become creative.
Right.
Because you're trying to, I've done a little bit of what you call needlepoint. So that's mostly the geometric shapes, isn't it? And all those lovely complicated stitches where you tuck things under and make little fans. And and they have lovely names. And I've done a bit of that, which I really enjoy. But the challenge here is that you're meant to be pictorial. So you choose a picture, which could be a landscape or it's very often a landscape, but it can be a building or something else. And to try and depict that on a grid in whatever stitches canvas work allows, which is an awful lot. So it's that trying to, at the moment, I'm trying to get the shape of two enormous tulips, which sit right at the front of my design. And I know they are never going to look naturalistic because that's not what canvas work does, but I have to make them recognizably tulips.
And your mind just wants to stitch a nice curve of stem stitch and fill it in and move on. Yeah.
Yep. Yes. Bit of long and short stitch and yeah.
It'd be so much easier.
It would, but it wouldn't be canvas work. So yeah.
Do you have a lot of variety of threads there? I know we've heard that, maybe not as many as we have in the United States.
Well, I have actually got some of them from the United States because especially since one of our bigger needle workshops closed, online needle workshops closed 2 or 3 years ago, I think just pre-pandemic. They were a bit of a one-stop shop for pretty much everything. And it's getting difficult now. So especially, I love the Rainbow Gallery threads. And they are not easy to get here. You can get some of them, but it's difficult to get the whole range of them. I love the Caron threads. They are not easy to get here sometimes. So, yes, it can be a bit challenging. Fortunately, I gather together quite a stash to begin with. So there is that. I can work from that. And, yeah. You know, the kindness of stitches is amazing. I have an order placed in America, which is a bit slow for various reasons. And then I decided that for the sky in my canvas work, I was going to use Caron's Soie Cristal, which is their stranded silk that is not variegated.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely thread. And I had it in 5 blues, which were just the right sort of thing. But canvas work takes such a lot of thread. My goodness. It is amazing. You sort of think, oh, I only have to cover about a square inch, and before you know it, you're half a skein down. It's quite alarming. But so I thought, I'm not sure that I've got enough to cover the whole sky with. But I didn't really want to add to my other order just in case that slowed things down again.
Right.
And I mentioned this on the Needle and Thread Facebook group. And one lady contacted me and said, I have a needle workshop nearby me in America. And I think they do the Caron silks. Do you want me to see if they do them? And then I'll send them to you. So she went shopping for me and for herself, I will admit that. And she sent them to me. So now I'm well up for blue silk, which is lovely.
There we go.
That is nice. Yeah.
Terrific.
That's great.
Yeah, there's more than one way around this supply chain problem. Yep.
There is. But yep. At the moment, I really enjoy anything gold work. And fortunately, we are very well off for gold work suppliers here. So I can get pretty much anything I want for that.
Yeah, you have the world's manufacturers right at your back door. Yeah, that's
well, that is true. Yes, yes. And I try to buy through the small independent designers and suppliers and support them, partly because I'm not quite at the point yet where I can buy in wholesale. But that's been good. And I did enjoy the gold work module. I think so far that's the one that I've just had the most fun with.
Now was that something you'd done before, or was that a new technique for you?
I had done a fair bit of gold work before, which was one of the reasons why they allowed me to do it as my second module, because normally it's the third or fourth.
Hmm.
And it was by sending in some pictures and saying, this is what I've done so far, that they said, oh, well, yeah, okay, you can do that second. So I knew I liked it. And I'd done a few day classes. I'd done a 3-day class where we did at Hampton Court Palace, which is amazing. And we did a racehorse in gold and copper and silver and various colours. And I did finish that. Hooray. So that's waiting to be framed. That was the biggest thing I'd done until then. I'd also done a bit of designing in gold work. So I did a snowman in gold and silver and copper, which was in Stitch magazine a couple of years ago. And so I'd done that, and I'd done a few more little projects. So I was fairly confident starting that, which was partly an advantage because I knew what I was doing. And it was partly a disadvantage because it made me argumentative.
Oops.
I mean this in the gentlest and most polite way possible, obviously, but I suppose I was more likely than somebody who hadn't done any gold work at all. I was more likely to say something like, but why can't I do it that way? Or why can't I do this or put that in? And, you know, basically I was that student, which I disliked so much myself when I was teaching. And, you know, that led to occasionally you have to then make choices, as with the Jacobean, where I said I used my accent color a bit too much, but I liked the way it looked. And so I thought, OK, well, I'll take the hit on that. They will probably take some points off, but that's the way I like it. And you have to sort of decide for yourself, how important is my score for me? Am I going to try and claw every point that I can? Or am I going to say, well, I obviously want to pass, but there are design decisions that I take which may not be... they would be within the brief, but they might be a bit controversial or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just have to decide whether or not you're willing to take the consequences for that. So I wanted to use Essing for the sun's rays in my gold work. Essing is a bit like stem stitch in tiny bits of gold, except because you can't take the gold through to the back of the fabric, you just have these little, you know, macaroni, like little half circles.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A bit like that, and you sort of do them one after the other and make them look like a cord or stem stitch together, but they're not actually going through the fabric. It's a bit difficult to explain when you can't show it.
So, okay, so do you couch them down, or do you run them through like a bead?
You run them through like a bead. So they are, they're a hollow wire and they're flexible. So you cut a little chip, they call it, sort of 5 or 6 millimeters length, and you take your needle through it and you put it on the fabric, and then you cut another one and you tuck that one halfway under the first. And then you do the next one and you tuck that one halfway under the second. And so it starts looking like stem stitch. And because they all go in a bit curvy, it's known as essing. And I thought that would be just the right thing for the rays of the sun that I had in mind. And I bounced this off the tutor and she said, oh, you can't do that. It's a, it's an advanced technique. And And I looked at the brief and I said, well, it doesn't say so. And she said, yes, here you have the techniques that you're using. I said, well, yes, but the there was a material section where it says these are the materials you use. And that was really, really clear. It said, these are the materials you can use. These are the materials you must use. You must use all of them and you must use nothing else. The only optional thing being spangles, which are like little goldwork sequins. But with the methods or with the techniques, it said you must include the following.
Yeah.
So
there's your window right there. Yeah.
My reading of that was, okay, so I can include other things as long as I don't use any materials that are not in the list. So, for example, you can't in your certificate piece, you cannot use kid leather, couch down kid leather, or broad plate, or various other things. But the essing is done in one of the standard materials that was on the list. So I bounced it off another tutor, because I had three in the course of the of that module. And she said, oh, the assessors won't like it. And I said, well, why won't they like it? And, you know. And the third one said, well, it's your design decision. If you think the design needs it, then do it and put it in your notes and then hand it in. So eventually that's what I did. And I had some points knocked off for that.
Saw that coming.
Yeah, I know. And but there were things, because they give you an assessment with a bit of explanation as to why they have taken points off or what was good or what could have been better, which is really helpful. But there were a few things in the assessment where I thought, I don't quite understand what they mean here, or could they point to a bit of the work where they think that really applies? So I wrote to Anne Butcher, who is the head of teaching and who's always very supportive and very helpful, and asked her these questions and mentioned the essing, because I said, I'm not asking for a reassessment. That's fine. I'm happy with my score, but I want it cleared up for future students. And she wrote back with very full details about all the things I'd asked about, which was really, really helpful. And she also said, you should not have lost those points.
No.
And she said, if the tutor is happy for the student to try something that is more advanced, then the student can do so. You don't get extra points for it, but you shouldn't have points knocked off. So she put them back.
Well, that's nice.
It was. And so I thought that was, because people sometimes think of the RSN as rather staid and inflexible, and they aren't. They are open to discussion, which is good.
Yeah. Well, because that's the picture that you can get very easily, is that it's this, you know, my way or the highway kind of thing. And you can see why in a lot of instances. I mean, when they talk about the number of people that worked on whatever princess's bridal dress, you know, everybody has to do that stuff the same way.
Yeah.
or it'd take 20 years to get that dress done. So, you know, you can understand that. And of course, you know, they're there to build a foundation for you, and then you go off on your own. But it's good to know that there's also some leeway for creativity and extra. Yeah.
Mm. So I find that really, really encouraging. And now I'm off to something that I don't know anything at all about. So
I was going to say, now you're at the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, my goodness. Am I just... Yes.
So you do a lot of doodle, like little practice then to see if you like the stitch before you put it on your canvas. Is that what you're doing?
At the moment, I'm three classes into my module, and doodling is all I have done so far. There is not a stitch on my actual canvas. The design is on there. The outline is on there. But so far, all I've done is on my doodle cloths. So, yes, there's a lot of that going on. Partly purely because I'm getting used to the materials and the scale of things. The fact that I need 9 strands of silk for good coverage. I have never done anything where I need 9 strands of silk. So, yes, just to get used to the feel of things, I suppose, is a great learning process. And you hand in all your doodle cloths with your final piece as well.
Oh, no.
So occasionally...
Oh, no.
Yes, you do.
Oh, no.
And if you want to use a stitch in a modified version, then your doodle cloth is there to show that you can do it the standard way, so that they know that you are actually doing a variation on a theme rather than making it up as you go along. So, yeah.
Okay, so Gary, does this make you want to still go to the Royal School of Needlework and take a class?
Absolutely. Okay. Without a doubt. No, because this is, to me, I mean, you can tell already that Ilka is a better stitcher for having gone through 2 modules.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm putting words in your mouth, but that's the only conclusion I can reach is that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yes.
And Beth, absolutely, because that's, you know, whatever foundation I have, this would solidify and fill in gaps. And I would do it in a heartbeat. You bet.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Would you do it, Beth?
Yes. I took one class. We were in London in 2019, and I said that's the one thing I want to do is go to Hampton Court and take a class. I said I don't care what the class is, I'll take it just a one day. And so I took a crewel work class. I enjoyed it. It was wonderful being there. I don't know how I would ever manage to do something like that, but there's part of me that would be interested to learn to do it the correct way, to correct. My fear is I have so many little, I know I do some things incorrectly. Mm-hmm. I'm not as careful of a stitcher. And it's like, oh, do I really want to go through the pain of, reteaching yourself? Because it is harder to get rid of some of those bad habits we've learned over the years than.
And unlearn things. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Was there a good deal of that for you so far, as unlearning?
Some of it, yes, but some of it also, I very much believe in looking at what project you're doing, what it's going to be. So if I'm doing a quick card and it's going to be padded at the back, I will start with a knot. And I don't care who knows it. But obviously, when I was doing the crewel work and the gold work and canvas work is different again. But, you know, I was starting and finishing the correct way with a knot at the front and a couple of small stitches and then snip off the knot and go from there. And I can do that. And in some projects, I do that. And in other projects, I think, nope, not worth it. I will just pop a knot in and get going. So it's, I think what it does is it widens your repertoire, and it also gives you the confidence to know when you can cut corners, if I could put it like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think, I think that speaks to, though, you take a Royal School of Needlework scenario, but then you take your business and your function as a designer, and at some point you just need to get the model done. You need to, you need to move this forward. And if making a knot gets you started faster and it's not going to show on the front, why not? Yeah, just go for it.
Yes, exactly. But I have learned, on the other hand, that there are situations where I would normally use a knot. And then I sort of learned why in that particular situation it wasn't a good idea. And so I take that away and go, yeah, they're right. So in that situation, I won't use a knot. Anywhere where you're starting a French knot and you're going back through the same hole that you came up in, you are bound to push your needle through the knot in the back and make an awful mess. So that's where I don't do it.
Right. Yeah. Those dreaded French knots.
Yes. Well, I rather like them.
I like stitching them too.
Once I mastered them, they were fine, but they are the sort of thing, they're easy when you know how to.
Right.
So let's talk about your own creative little world. I should have said at the beginning, for those who did not listen to the previous three conversations, and why haven't you, Ilka's business is Mabel Figworthy's Fancies. And I first ran into Ilka, a cross-stitch forum website. And
that's right.
Yeah, and you were doing stitch along monthly projects for Hardanger.
That's right. Yes.
Yes. And so that's where we first ran to you, and that was my first exposure to that technique. And we've just been in touch ever since then. And you've done several of those monthly stitch along things. And so your current design work, what kinds of things are you doing?
At the moment, I'm doing all sorts of things, really. The biggest ones that I've been doing were a pair of goldwork designs that are going to be in the next issue of Stitch magazine. It's one goldwork and one silverwork, and they form a pair. I've had a lot of fun with bio stitch, and so I've been playing with that. Not a bit more than a week ago, I listened to a very interesting lecture by Tanya Bentham, who is an English designer, very, very good at medieval techniques like Opus Anglicanum and this bio stitch, which she prefers to call laid and couched work, because she says if you call it bio stitch, everybody just thinks of the bio tapestry, and it was used in much more than that. And I'd come across a book about the bio tapestry, and it is just such a vivid piece of needlework. And what always interested me about it, especially when I started on the certificate and I was first working with my slate frame on my trestles, I thought if one of those medieval women came into the house, one of the very few things that she would recognize would be my embroidery setup. And that sense of connection a millennium apart, I found that really, really powerful. And so I read up about it. And the margins of the bio tapestry are full of extremely quirky little characters, and a few very rude ones as well, but we pass over those. You really need to stitch a few fig leaves there. But but they have little... There's a camel in there, for goodness sake. It doesn't look like any camel on Earth, but it is recognisably a camel, either that or a very strange horse with two bumps on its back. And they are just such fun. So I've been picking out a few of those because I taught a six-week course at our local adult education centre last year, which was an introduction to freestyle embroidery. And several people said, oh, we'd like to do something to follow up. So I thought, okay, well, I'd like to do something that goes a little bit deeper into one or two techniques. So we'll do 3 weeks of crewel work and 3 weeks of gold work. And so for the gold work, I want to use one of the pair that I just talked about. And for the crewel work basically means wool embroidery. So you can have different styles. So I thought, well, I'll do 1 week with the tiny little bio tapestry type thing. And then I'll do 1 week with a small Jacobean style embroidery. And then 1 week with a sort of modern crewel work. So I was picking out all these little creatures. And then I got I ordered Tanya Bentham's bio book on pre-order. And at one point looked at her blog and blow me, she was doing one of the little peacocks that I'd been playing with myself. And I thought, this is embarrassing. So I actually wrote to her and said, look, I honestly had been playing with these designs before I saw your book. Am I going to tread on your toes if I do them as well? And she said, no. And of course, the bio tapestry itself is long out of copyright, so you can pretty much do with that whatever you like. So at the moment, I've just bought in some lovely new wools, and I'm hoping to start on a particularly quirky bio style peacock, which actually looks much more like a slightly colourful turkey. So, yeah.
So you teach these at a somewhere local then? You have a group of ladies that get together or?
It's, various tutors offer various classes from language to photography to listening to opera to embroidery. And they go in the term catalogue and then people can sign up for that. Generally local people because they need to come to the venue.
Right.
So, and I teach there off and on, and I tend to teach at the Knitting and Stitching Show in London. I do workshops there. So I've just handed in my proposals for the October show.
So how big of a show is that? The Knitting and
Stitching Show.
Yes.
It's difficult to say because I've never been to an American show. And so I'm sorry, this is obviously a stereotype, but I always think that they're probably bigger in America. if the car shows are anything to go by. But it's Alexandra Palace is the venue for that one. And it's quite big. I mean, you can trundle around there for a couple of days quite happily. They tend to have one big, big room full of suppliers, and then they have one smaller room with what you might call the small independent designers and suppliers. And then there's a separate room with people just doing demonstrations and workshops. Okay. So that's good fun. And I do individual lessons as well, so people can just sort of book me as a teacher or come to my house and have one-on-one tuition.
Well, good, big, or otherwise, we can't do them in palaces, so you guys win.
That's right. No palaces, just convention centers.
There you go. Yes, it does look good. It's a bit like going to Hampton Court Palace for your stitching. It just give it a little bit extra. But I'm afraid I do my certificate at the rugby branch, which is not nearly so impressive, but a lot more accessible for me because it's only 3 miles from where I live.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The projects for Stitch Magazine, having done the modules at RSN, easier, better job, do you feel, in putting those together?
I don't really know, because I started those models before I started the Goldwork module. So, okay.
So that was when you were still a rebel in Goldwork. Okay.
Oh, definitely. Yes. I had done several classes with the RSN, so I knew what they were about. But yes, so they were sort of simultaneously going on. And whether the last bit of my stitched models is better than the first bit, I haven't really looked at those. I should be getting them back any time now. So, but they are, I can now divulge what they are. They are a silverwork umbrella and a goldwork parasol as a pair. And they work, they're a bit like samplers in that I've tried to put as many different bits of techniques in them. So that when you do one of those projects, you will have tried quite a lot of the various techniques and materials. Not Essing, by the way. But quite a few of the other ones. So, which is why I thought I'd use one of them as the teaching project for next year, later this year.
Yeah. As you've gone through the years here designing, do you find that there is one or two techniques that you prefer, or do you still, do you just generally enjoy trying different techniques?
Definitely that. I think the technique I enjoy most is the one I happen to be working on, but it works the other way around as well. The technique I enjoy most at that particular point is the one I tend to design in. So if I'm fired up for a goldwork phase, I will be churning out little goldwork designs. And if I'm feeling woolly, so to speak, I will be churning out woolen designs. And one of the questions you sent me was, do you design for yourself or do you design with an audience in mind? I'm really, really privileged that this is not my day job. So I can do pretty much what I like and throw it out there and say, if other people like it as well, wonderful. If they don't, it's okay. I enjoyed it. So that is mostly what I do. The only trouble being that my designing goes much faster than my stitching. So, and in some cases, oddly enough, I found that just getting it on paper and deciding what the stitches would be and what the threads would be and what it would look like and what order I would stitch it in, sometimes just getting that on paper is actually enough. And then I stuff it in a drawer and it might be 4 or 5 years before I actually stitch it. And some of them I just want to get into stitching. So the crewel work for the Jacobean certificate had a snail on a brick, who was based on a poem by A.A. Milne of Winnie the Pooh fame. And so he's known as James the Snail. And I thought, actually, wouldn't he look nice in goldwork? So at the moment, I'm playing with James as a goldwork snail. And he may become a kit, or he may not. He may just be something I do for fun. We'll see when I finished with him.
Well, based on the photo you sent, he's going to look good in goldwork, yes.
Yes, that is the photo I sent you. That's right.
So are you able to send out kits again, or is that still in?
I've been sending out kits really throughout the pandemic, and other materials. It's been slower. And especially when I was sending abroad, I would send out a message and say, look, it is going to take several weeks. And if that is going to be a problem, let me know, because in that case, it's much better not to order. But I think in the past 2 years, I've had two things that never arrived, and everything else has finally turned up.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So that's not been too bad.
All right.
Yeah, I always find the question of whether you stitch for yourself or stitch for an audience to be interesting. Denzel Washington, the actor, saw him interviewed after he'd done a very serious movie, a superb movie, and of course I can't remember the name of it right now. And of course he's known for action and action films and that kind of thing. And I saw him interviewed, and the question was, you know, you do all these other films that basically have a plot depth of one level. And then you do this very serious, very moving film. And he said, yeah, he says, you do the action films to make the money so you can do what you want to do. And I thought that really spoke, you know, to the artist end of things. So then it enters my mind with needlework artists. Do you make that decision consciously in terms of you know, this design sold a lot, brought in some money. I should do more of that and then bring in more money, and then that will give me revenue to then play with what I want, or you know, like you have a situation where you can just say, this is what I enjoy doing, and put it out there, and it works or it doesn't. Yes,
and I'm very lucky in that that I can do that. And it started out as a hobby that paid for itself. And my husband occasionally nudges me and says, go on, world domination. And I go, no, I don't want world domination. It's far too much like hard work. I want to enjoy what I'm doing. And the moment it becomes a chore, I don't want to do it anymore, because we have a day job. We have a business that we run to, you know, pay the grocery bills and so on, which is quite enjoyable as day jobs go. But that is what I do as work. And when I turn to my embroidery, I don't want it to be work. I want it to be enjoyable. That doesn't mean that sometimes it doesn't feel like work. I mean, when I was doing the stitched models for the magazine, you know, I had a deadline. I do not like deadlines. So at that point, it was not particularly relaxed, especially when something goes wrong. I'd started and done quite a bit of work on one of the pair, and then I decided that I really didn't like the fabric that I was working on. And so I started all over again with new fabric, which, of course, made the deadline just that little bit more challenging. On the other hand, I just knew that if I went on with the fabric that I'd chosen first, and that was a fabric that I had chosen 3.5 years ago, because it's a design that had been simmering in the background. And I had transferred it to two bits of fabric that I'd chosen at the time, and I'd cut bits out and so on, and it just sat there. And then I started it, had a chat with the editor at Stitch Magazine, because we would occasionally sort of bounce things off each other, and I'd say, oh, well, I've got that one. Because she said, I have a theme, and I said, well, I've got that one, which might be okay. I haven't actually stitched it yet, but, oh, she said, we'll have it. And, okay, I better get stitching then. So I started, and then realized by then I had done some day classes and was sort of looking towards the goldwork module for the certificate. And I'd been working with Silk Dupion, which is a lovely, lovely fabric. And so I just looked at it and thought, it's okay, but it would look so much better if I did it on silk dupion. Mm. And at that point, I had to decide what I was going to do and whether I was going to throw away that work and just start over again. And I am very, very glad that I did, because it looks so much better. And I would always have regretted not doing that. But that was very much having had the RSN experience and learning about new materials and so on, which then influenced the design in that way. But I still very much enjoyed working on it.
Yeah, that for me, that the minute there's a deadline of any kind, that's when the fun quickly goes out of the stitching. It's Yep. All right, Ilke, we're gonna have to stop.
Okay.
So that's too bad, because we could talk for another hour, but we're gonna have to stop.
Easily.
Yep.
Well, I'll have to get back in another 2 years or so.
Well, actually, no, we're not gonna wait that long. We're gonna come back and we're gonna learn about canvas work from your perspective is what we're gonna do.
Oh my goodness, yes.
When you finish that module.
Yeah, well, as and when. That might be 2 years, you know. it's been great fun talking to the two of you. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for doing it, and thanks to everyone for listening.